C1C. Number 9B.
Then we go further, and we still think, is she still telling us what is the basis of everything? Perfect principle, perfect idea. And I read, if man was once perfect, again I have the tone of perfection, but somehow it seems that something else is coming in. If man was once perfect, but now has lost his perfection, then mortals have never beheld in man the reflex image of God. I begin to see she's talking still around the perfect man, the perfect principle, but now has he lost it? And I'm not quite sure yet what she wants to bring home, so I read on. The lost image, lost is even italicized, is no image. Gain the sense of loss. The true likeness, cannot be lost, again lost, in divine reflection. And I have a sense she goes right back to soul, all about that losing business. It's lost and lost and lost. And that rings within me the sense of soul, so I get a bit irritated. I'm thrown out of my order. I had already seen that she has presented the subject of principle through mind, and then spirit, and soul, and then principle, and now suddenly she somehow goes back to that lost business, to soul. So I have to accept what she says. I mean, we can't negate that. The true likeness cannot be lost, and again lost, in the divine reflection. I really get now irritated. So we had already one lost, and a second, and a third. I go on and still feel, I wonder what it is. Understanding this, Jesus said, be therefore perfect. And I get really back to the fundamental tone of principle as being perfect. Be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. I get again that underlying tone of principle that we have to do with a perfect Father and a perfect Son, with a perfect God and a perfect man. And she said about the perfect principle and the perfect idea, that relationship, just went through it as a general tone, so I know that was the general tone, but here I get irritated. I feel somehow here something isn't evolving in the usual order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, and then soul. Yes? Goes back to soul. And so what do you do? Perhaps the best thing is if one reads it again and sees, have I been sidetracked by something or not? And so let's read again. And I read it now correctly. I will accentuate it now correctly. I didn't accentuate it correctly the first time. I accented it wrongly. I just wanted to show you how suddenly the same text with the same words, exactly the same text, when you accentuate it differently, that you certainly begin to realize what it is. So let's start again at line 15, and we read, if man was once perfect, but has now lost his perfection, then mortals have never beheld in man the reflex image of God. The lost image is no image. The true likeness cannot be lost in divine reflection. Understanding this, Jesus said, Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. Did you hear the difference? The point was actually that she takes up that sense of loss, yes, but she wants to say that we have never lost it because it's an eternal fact. Therefore, all those terms that have to do with the counterfeit of life and with the facts of life, of isness, compared with was and will be, are actually the point in here. That she wants to say that the perfect man can never lose his perfection, that man can never lose his perfection. Yes? My epitome there is also principle as life. Man can never lose his perfection, and it's just a matter of how you pronounce it. It would be principle as soul if I would pronounce it. Man can never lose his perfection. Yes? And it's a great difference. The difference is, can we lose it or can we not lose it? That's soul. But the moment I ask, is there a possibility ever to lose anything? See? Not to ask, can one lose or not lose? But this is a question, can he ever lose anything? Then you touch the tone of eternality of perfection, of the everlastingness of perfection, and you say, he could not once lose it. And so, he cannot now have lost it. And therefore, it's an appeal, so to say, to the reader to see, now is the accepted time. Now you are the perfect man, and now you are it, and you always wear it, and you always be it. It's just nonsense to think that you could ever lose it. Not ever lose it. That would be wrong. Huh? It's a question, can one ever lose it? And it gives you a terrific sense of the eternality of the perfection of man. Yes? Say yes.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Ah, that's good. That's good. Now you got it, huh? Yeah. All right. So, that would be principle, huh? Now we have seen how within this principle, let's just take my epitomes again and run through. The main epitome already shows us a lot in two ways. It states here, man as a true idea of creation is as perfect as its perfect divine principle. Just wanting to bring out the absolute correlation of man and principle. The absolute correlation of creation and creator, both at the point of perfection. So it's an absolute correlation. So that's really the tone of principle. But also we begin to see something because she depicts the relationship of creator and creation, which she has not done up to now. We can see that here is a turning point in the whole story. Because up to now she just presented from absolute abstract standpoint creation and said, creation is of the nature of ideas and these ideas are mind's ideas. Spirit, this creation of ideas is the only substantial creation. It consists of the substance of spirit. Okay. He goes to soul and says, this creation that is idea, and that idea is the only substance, is never in any limited form. It's always boundless. Okay, there it is. So what? we say, so what? What did I gain with it? We wouldn't have gained very much with it, and all what we would have gained would have been saying, I have now a new philosophy. I have now a new description of reality. It's now an idealistic description of reality, no more materialistic description of reality. And if she would leave it at that point, we wouldn't have gained a thing, really, except a different world view. But now she has to show that man is that creation, that we are not somewhere outside that creation, but that we are actually that creation. So she brings in now, from principle onward, she brings in really the relationship first. It says, you know, you are that creation, you are that perfect creation, just as perfect as principle. So we have to see, therefore, now come in the subtones, how that has to be realized within our consciousness. And so we have principle as mind, where she shows that humanity is perfected as it gains the true conception of man and God. I could even have abbreviated that to make it more clear or precise. We would just have said, all right, so what do we have to do? I have first to have a true conception of this creator and creation. That's the very first thing, mind. I have to have a true conception of it. And that true conception, from the point of view of principle as spirit, the perfect concept of man is spiritual. I must see that I have now already a spiritual status, and therefore must not gain first a spiritual status, so that within my conception I can go out from an absolutely spiritual conception. What kind of spiritual conception? We come to soul. Through spiritual sense, we can really comprehend the generic term man. So I see, oh-ho, I need my spiritual sense now to see the generic term man, to see through spiritual sense that I am everything. I am the sum total of all substance. With spiritual sense, I can really take in as my identity everything that is of the nature of God. And we had there that man is the sum of all substance. Never forget that. That's a good illustration of our birth. Huh? That man is the substance of everything in this world. Huh? Like the bird up there, his substance is, among others, the insects, among others, the gravitational force, among others, the President of the United States. He's everything. Huh? He's everything up there. Isn't it terrific? See? He can also be Brezhnev or anybody. Because all depends on everything else in the universe. Yeah? That's quite enough. So I begin to see that my true identity as man is actually the sum total of the universe. And when I see that, I begin to realize in principle as principle that therefore I am absolutely perfect. I'm not only the sum total, because that sum total still could be a totality of all kinds of things, positive, negative things. But now comes principle and says, but it is exactly like that principle, and therefore your totality is a perfect totality. Nothing is imperfect within you. And then comes life and says, and that is something you had since time immemorial, and there is no possibility that you could ever lose it. You always had it. You always will have it. You can never lose it. And then you have the tone of life. So man can never lose his perfection. In this tone of principle, again, something completely different than in mind, or in spirit, or in soul. And can you see how they differentiate? Do you see what Mrs. Eddy says? Spirit diversifies. Here we have begun to diversify the question of creation and say creation is just one term. Even if I look up the best dictionary and see what the dictionary says about creation, I don't know what creation is spiritually and in Christian Science. I jolly well have to go to the whole text in order to define creation. A text of 15 or 16 pages, however how many pages this is, that is one great definition of the one term, creation. And so through differentiation, I get a clearer understanding. Can you see what I said in the beginning? I said, science works through diversification, because every further diversification is a clearer understanding. Yes? Understanding grows now. You have been listening now only for about 3 hours to the text as I explained it, and you know already now more about the chapter than all the 40 years of reading the chapter. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yes? You see? Can you see that method is everything? That method is everything. If we choose the false method, we have not the big result. If I have to flatten out the hill and I take a spoon and try to scratch it off, you know, it takes me about 10 million years until that hill is scratched off. Huh? I can use the method of a little spoon. Huh? But I can also use the method of a nice hydrogen, a clean hydrogen bomb, and then I do that whole job in a day or in a second. It's method. And if only this is seen for the whole week, it's worth your fee you have been paying. Huh? Because that is the shortcut in science. Always that. Is there no shortcut in science? Yes, there is. Namely, science itself. That's the shortcut. Science itself is the shortcut. All the rest is walking around in the wilderness, never knowing where one is going and where one is coming to. Yeah, that's what I wanted to show. Huh? All right. So we go on. And we come to a further paragraph. But let's say that we wouldn't have these epitomes which already define that now comes a tone of life, something very different. But let's say we wouldn't know anything about it and we would just be reading on and we just see how we would react on that text. All right. I read on. Mortal thought, mortal thought, up to now it was always the infinite and the finite, suddenly comes mortal thought, and something within me says, now, this somehow changes to the tone of mortality and immortality perhaps, but I am quite hesitant and go on. Mortal thought transmits its own images. Mortal thought transmits its own images. I have learned up to now in that chapter that mind forms the image, didn't we? And that spirit really forms the likeness. And that soul really defines the image and likeness. How on earth now mortal thought should transmit its own images? And I really thrown out of my balance for a moment, and see, this is something quite new, quite different. Why should now mortal thought, why should now mortal man have something to do with creation and can now transmit its own images and form its offsprings after human illusions? Now I get a different creation, a creation that is absolutely upside down compared with what has been shown before. And so I begin to realize, here apparently Mrs. Eddy begins to show really the wrong creation, the creation in a wrong way, the false creation in a way, how that starts, that we are the father mind, that mortals can be the father mind, but that mind, the small m, not the capital M, as she has been speaking about, and that mortal's mind, mortal thought, mortal father mind can build up a whole creation after illusions. And I begin to realize now she's tackling our false concept of the universe, you see, and forms its offspring after human illusions. Now, when you have a tonality sense within you of life, you know that this sentence, though it has no synonymous terms within it, but the tonality in it is showing fatherhood. Wrong fatherhood, naturally, but fatherhood. Namely, it is showing the relationship between creator and creation, and shows how that creation is brought about. That's what the father does. He creates a creation. That's his symbol. So we get always then, we have a sense of fatherhood when creation is not considered what is the creator, but when creation is considered in the relationship of creator to creation, then you have life. See? It's the fatherhood, the activity of bringing from a source something to manifestation in one's creation, in one's universe. And so it is that each one mortally creates his own universe, each one. That's why everyone has his own universe. It is not so that we live in the same universe, not at all. We only think that because the Mississippi flows the way it flows, and that the trees are the trees as they are, that the universe is the universe it is. No. We create it. We walk through that universe, and we look at that universe, and each one looks at it differently. He projects into the universe his own thought, and therefore he has a completely different universe than his fellow men. Do you see that fatherhood sense? That each one creates his own universe. We all together may walk through the same countryside, and the same countryside is different for each one. Though the flowers don't change, the trees don't change, the river doesn't change, the mountains are there, they are there for everybody, and yet it's a different universe. The one is sad, and therefore sees the universe on the field different. One is happy and joyous, and therefore he enjoys everything. It's his mentality that creates the universe. This sentence here. This is the key sentence for the whole tone of life here, really. Namely, that a source projects something into the universe, and according as the source is, according to that the universe is. That's fatherhood sense. So, having seen that, my mentality is already geared into that fatherhood sense, here in the negative way, and this is rectified at once, that he says, God spirit works spiritually, not materially. So apparently he has another kind of source and attitude than mortal thought. Then she goes back again to the mortal thought. Brain or matter never formed a human concept. So it isn't brain or matter that has to be blamed. Not the material universe has to be blamed for what kind of universe we have. You see? She makes that very clear and says, don't blame now matter, the way that matter is, and say that's the universe you have, because the material universe has never formed your concept of the universe. It has never formed a human concept. So we can't blame the universe, say, because the universe is not nice, I don't have a nice universe and I don't like to live in it. Because it has never created a human concept. Vibration is not intelligence. Hence, it is not a creator. So only intelligence is actually a creator. And now she gives the metaphysical explanation. A terrific sentence, a sentence we all should consider very clearly because it answers many, many fundamental questions. She says, immortal ideas, pure, perfect, and enduring. Well, these are the ideas. What are ideas? We have seen now, through the great subject of mind, spirit, soul, principle, an ideational universe. Immortal ideas constitute the universe. So they are pure, perfect, enduring. And they are transmitted by the divine mind. See, by the divine mind, not by human concepts. Not by human concepts. By the divine mind, through divine science, and now, which corrects error with truth and demands spiritual thoughts, divine concepts. For what purpose? To the end that they may produce, you have again the father sense, that they may produce what? A harmonious result. Can you see the terrific impact of that sentence? That she says, you see, up to this point you said, you presented the universe as if it were an abstract universe of ideas, spiritual, infinite. But these ideas, they do something to you. Why do they something to you? Because in principle it has said principle and idea is one, therefore they touch you. Perfect principle, perfect man, they are going to touch you. How are they going to touch you? They are transmitted by that divine mind through divine science. First, to do what? To come to our thought and correct error with truth and demand now spiritual thoughts. So ideas are now translated to the point of thoughts. When are they translated to the point of spiritual thoughts? Then when these ideas have shown what is true and what is wrong, and we corrected it. When these ideas has been taken in, the subject of mind, spirit, soul, as principle has been taken in by us as ideas and have corrected a wrong concept of creation, then we think about that universe, we think about now that universe in terms of ideas. And so it demands spiritual thought, divine concepts. It's no more concepts, human concepts, they are now divine concepts. So what? If you have divine concepts, now comes in the fatherhood and says, whatever you have in your consciousness, that is expressed in your life. You can't have consciousness and not experience, and therefore they produce a harmonious results. And you get your true universe.